the government saying, "Oh, bring football back because it's going to boost the nation's morale." I don't give a fuck about the nation's morale, bro. People's lives are at risk, so it's just football shouldn't even be spoke about, like, coming back until the numbers have dropped, like, massively. It's bollocks, bro.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellum.
Hello.
In lockdown still, but, big announcement here. We might be talking about actual football next week. There may be some football for us to discuss, rather than talking about what would happen if there was some football, or what can we do because we're not allowed to play any football. There could actually be some football, and it's coming from Germany. Luckily enough, we have a German expert on the show, someone who always tries to talk about German football whenever he gets the opportunity, always tries to steer the conversation round to it anyway. So, Terry, German football back next week. They've been talking about it for the last few weeks. The dates seem to be creeping away, but now this one, May 16th, set in stone, isn't it? Next Saturday.
Insofar as anything is set in stone, yes, it is set in stone. It's been fixturized and everything. The fixtures are up on livefootballontv.co.uk, which if it's on there, you know it's happening. The players are nearly ready, well, as ready as they can be. And it will be kicking off, starting with the 3:30 local time fixtures on Saturday afternoon. The big game being the Revere Derby between Borussia Dortmund and Schalke, of course, which will be massive, so, albeit quiet.
Well, yeah. So what are they doing? Are they still holding the usual TV slots? Obviously, they're not having the Friday night slot. There's usually a Friday night game for the Bundesliga, isn't it?
There is. This round of fixtures, there's the usual 3:30, 5:30, and then there's the two Sunday fixtures. But they're having a Monday fixture because they have a small number of Monday fixtures. There wasn't a Friday one. It might well be that there'll be a Friday one next week, and they might alternate. But they have an obligation to do a certain number of Monday fixtures for this season. That is about to change. I think with the next TV deal, the Monday fixtures have been scrapped because of, if you remember, all of those protests that I spoke about a few months ago. And they worked, and the Mondays have been basically not happening. So I imagine that they'll be using this break to say, let's try and get as many Monday fixtures as we possibly can. This return, rather, to try and get as many Monday fixtures as we can. So that's the pattern, but we'll see. I don't have the schedules for the following week up ahead in front of me, so I don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me if they go back to Fridays as well.
The big Revere Derby this weekend, that's a really big game to come back to, but it's not going to have anywhere near the sort of atmosphere what it usually has.
No, I mean, it's one of the most febrile atmospheres in world football, the Revere Derby. The hatred between the two sets of fans is extremely real, and indeed, and it has been problematic in the past. Even if all of the fans are well behaved, you're still getting an enormous noise from either stadium that you play in. I think it's being played in the Westfalen. Under normal circumstances, if you were going to that game, you'd have to work really hard to focus and stay focused on the actual football because you'd be so distracted by the atmosphere in the stadium. But of course, now you've got no choice but to focus solely on the football because that's all there is. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the players respond to the fact that they're playing in one of the great German derbies, arguably one of the great world derbies, really, without fans. I mean, will they behave and play with the intensity that you see from these kind of derby games, or will they not, because there's less fans in the stadium, and also because they're still probably not 100% at it because they've been away from the training ground. They've only had a small amount of time to actually properly prepare for these matches. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how it plays out.
As just observers of the game, we are conscious of how teams prepare. the fact that they're in training pretty much every day. And when a season starts, there'll be plenty of friendlies, which we are told is for conditioning players. When we see players returning from injury, we're used to them being allowed back in a regulated manner, whereby they'll only pay for 20 minutes in a game or they'll play for the reserves. Now you've got players that haven't played for 2 months and they haven't even trained properly for that time as well. So it is going to be fascinating as an observer of the game to see what a game is like when players haven't been exposed to actual playing conditions for 2 months.
Yeah, it should be quite interesting because you would imagine that there may be some lack of coordination amongst the team because they're not used to playing with each other. There's definitely going to be a fitness angle. I mean, I would imagine if your job is to be a professional athlete, even though you've had a 2 month lockdown where you can't train as you normally would, you'd have still kept yourself in a fairly, you know, in fairly good working order. And I've no doubt all of the players have been doing that. But there's still that match fitness that they're not going to have. So while that can sound quite negative, I think actually it might make for more interesting games because it could mean that players are going to make mistakes and maybe they're not going to be as slick as they were. And so you could end up seeing some quite interesting back and forth high scoring matches. I mean, that would be a really good outcome. It's going to be great to have this back. I mean, I know that there are still issues with the virus in Germany, obviously, as everywhere else, although they've handled it a lot better, as we said. There have been some players that have been tested positive. I caught, Terry, just a kind of a snippet of an issue involving Hertha Berlin, where I think there was a video circulating with Solomon Kalou walking through the dressing room shaking everyone's hands while somebody else was getting tested. And you're like, really, guys? Really? this shouldn't be going out. You shouldn't even be recording that when you're this close to lifting the ban. That's provided some entertainment anyway. Yeah, in answer to your question, you know, it has the potential to lift everyone's spirits, not just in Germany, but across the continent. But, you know, it remains to be seen how slick it's going to be.
German football has a reputation for being very slick, very professional, and very system-driven, very tactically driven. You tend to associate, for example, Spanish football with individual talent. And I think that a lot of that is probably driven by the narrative that's driving from guys like Messi and Ronaldo. And then, you know, but then you tend to look more at the Premier League, which is more associated with blood and thunder. These are all massive generalizations, obviously. German football is more systems and tactics driven rather than necessarily driven by individual players. And so following that logic, the concern might be that these guys won't have had enough time to work through the systems with the players and that actually, you know, the football might suffer as a consequence. But there really is no way of knowing because occasionally players do play behind closed doors. And certainly players in the past would have played in front of tiny, tiny crowds. Of course they would when they were youngsters, you know, playing at underage level, they wouldn't have played in front of full crowds. So they're not going to necessarily find that off-putting. But the mixture of the pressure of getting the result along with the absence of fans and that maybe lack of sharpness could combine to see perhaps a bit of a levelling out of quality and may actually result in some surprise results as a consequence.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
In that respect, I'm quite looking forward to it. And I think if you like to see surprising outcomes, then it might be worth a look. But I mean, I suspect if you're a football fan, then you're going to want to take a close look at this anyway, because really, apart from the K-League, that's all that's on. And you should watch the K-League as well, if you can. The only thing I would probably add as one thing to be concerned about is Dynamo Dresden are a second Bundesliga club that have had to, en masse, go into quarantine. And their match with Hannover 96 has been abandoned, or postponed, I should say, because two of their players contracted COVID-19, and they've had to put their entire squad into isolation. So, you know, if things like this start to happen over the next few weeks, then we're going to see fixtures piling up already. There's only 9 to go. Or worse, you might even find that the decision is taken to scrap the whole thing and either try and go again a little bit later in the year or abandon it altogether. So I'd say things are pretty precarious.
The problems that they're having in Germany, or the reasons why they are pushing to complete the seasons, are the same reasons as they're looking to finish the season over in the Premier League. And that's not because of football integrity. It's down to the fact that they've got bills to pay and contractual obligations. what we're seeing in Germany, and as Terry just pointed out, you've got the top two divisions here. So this goes quite deep. This is 36 teams playing across the country, going around from ground to ground. None of this neutral venues thing that they're talking about. You've got to move all of these people around. It takes a lot of people to put on a game of football, a professional game of football. The world is going to be watching this. Every other league that hasn't already just abandoned until September. Do you think this is going to bring more pressure on leagues, not just the Premier League, but on the Championship and League One and League Two, to try to complete fixtures, even though there isn't the financial imperative, maybe, for League One and League Two to complete?
I think it will. I mean, when we started talking about what is now restart, my concern was, because I think even it was mooted back then that Germany were going to go before everybody else, my concern was that would put pressure on the leagues in England to prematurely go back. I mean, I was reading an article earlier today. I think it was an interview with Karen Brady, who is not the nicest person in the world. But I think even she was saying, look, if we're going to do this, if we're going to do behind closed doors, you still need between 300 and 500 people to put on the show, assuming it's televised, that is. So you've got security, you've got your medics, you've got your players, you've got your officials, you've even got your pesky VAR technicians, and possibly some admin staff in there as well. And something else that struck me when I was reading that, who's going to get the ball from the stands? Because surely there is no club going to allow ball boys and ball girls. You don't allow children into the ground, are you, when this is all going on? So, yeah, you're going to have, you know, people just vaulting across the seats.
Drones.
To get the ball. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. There was that scene a few years ago where the Sunderland goalkeeper had to go and get the football from the stands behind him. And that wasn't even behind closed doors. It was just because there was nobody in the ground. And yeah, you might see some crazy scenes like that. But I mean, practicalities like that, you've got to think of. You're going to have to replace those staff with other people that are going to have to go and fetch them unless they've got some kind of webbing up to stop the ball from, you know, going into a row Z.
And saying that, who's going to escort the players out onto the pitch without an eight-year-old there? I mean, I don't know how the players are going to find their way to the centre circle.
Yeah, I assume that that's why they have the children present, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the players
they know the way.
They're going to have to draw a map for the players. So here's the tunnel, there's the pitch. So make your way in this direction. No, this way. Yeah, just follow the arrows, yeah? Pitches over there.
Well, someone's got to take the ball from that little plinth and carry it to the centre circle, haven't they?
Once upon a time, the referees, I don't want to be nostalgic about plinths, but I'm pretty certain when I first saw the plinths, it was the referee that picked them up. And now, obviously, it's the mascots. I mean, I don't know whether or not referees would stoop that low and say, well, hang on, I have a lackey for this sort of thing.
I have child labour to do that for me.
Yeah.
They could start hitting the leagues up for a bit more money, couldn't they? Because they have to do more work. But talking of the lower leagues, Graham, if I just talk about Leagues 1 and 2 for a bit, you mentioned obviously with the more prestige leagues, their desire to finish the seasons driven by the fact that they've got contracts to fulfil, and that is in the main coming from the media. In Leagues 1 and 2, that doesn't exist. Those guys get their revenue in the main from matchday revenue. So completing the season for those guys, I think, is a complete waste of time. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to be too simplistic. There needs to be some way of deciding who goes up and who goes down and things like that. But deciding to play those games out, I can't reconcile myself to it. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. A lot of these clubs have got players and staff that are furloughed at the moment. So as soon as they're required to do a day's work, then they have to come off furlough and the club then has to start paying them rather than the government. And if they're not bringing in any revenue for the match days, then it could actually be worse for League One and Two clubs to actually restart the season than it would be just to call it off and let those guys batten down the hatches, mothball themselves, whatever they need to do, so they're ready for when a restart can happen. Because I don't think that this season is actually what the problem is for the clubs in the lower divisions. Though, don't get me wrong, this season is a sizable problem for them. But it's next season, and possibly even the season after that, that's the problem. Because if you can't have people in the ground paying their money to watch the team play, then these guys can't operate, because very few of the revenue streams that are going to cover the costs, and they certainly don't get enough from TV, they're really, really going to struggle. There are about 1,400 players that are out of contract in June.
you're going to ask yourself whether those guys are actually going to want to play football now, given that they could compromise their health. And then that means that maybe they might not be fit enough for a new contract. Bradford City have stopped selling season tickets or just kind of abandoned plans to sell season tickets next season. So it's the longer game, I think, for Leagues 1 and 2. And I think I really worry that if they are required to play by the FA or the EFL, then we could be putting a gun to some of these guys' heads, because they could well be forced to go out of business by actually doing the thing that they're in business to do.
The whole thing about players coming up to the end of contracts, with so many clubs in financial hardship, is there going to be like a huge wave of unemployment amongst players? Do you see that coming out across Europe in the next couple of years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that there's going to be all kinds of issues from the very top all the way down to the very bottom. The suggestions that the transfer window may end up having to get scrapped for a few years is a very sensible argument. But the mere fact that you've got contracts running out at the end of June, if you're still playing football in that time and you've got players technically out of contract who's registered still with their club, do they carry on playing? How does that work? You can probably find solutions to these problems at Premier League level, even Championship level, and indeed top league level at any of the senior countries. But when you start getting down into the lower leagues, you know, you've got professional contracts that they're just effectively going to be null and void. And then no club necessarily around with the income and the revenue streams to actually be able to sign new players. They want to, but if they don't actually have any money to do it, they're not going to be able to. They're just not going to be able to fulfill their squad. So ultimately, we say it almost every week, but it is worth just repeating that without a vaccine, it's unrealistic to think that football matches are going to be open to the public for the foreseeable future until there's a vaccine. And if that's a period of years, then given the scenario that Jan has just eloquently presented, there are going to be football clubs at a certain level. The non-league clubs are just going to be toast, right? I mean, like, they can barely survive on their match day revenue as it is. How on earth could they possibly be expected to play matches if they can't open the gates and charge people for tickets? It's just not realistic. And yeah, the knock-on effect will be that you'll have all of these players out looking for other work. Some players have actually already retired. There's a guy in Scotland, apparently, who's this whole business has like made him realise actually there are more important things in life than football, and has decided to presumably get a proper job or something, get a career maybe. I wouldn't blame any lower league players for thinking, you know, I'm in my mid-20s. It could be a long time before I'm working again. I need to find a job, provide for myself or provide for my family, and more power to them for doing it. But I mean, I don't think people really think about it in those terms. They just assume that it will just switch back on again. And I said last week that clubs do have a great habit of surviving, but ultimately thinking that through, you know, if you can't sell tickets, you can't trade if you're a football club, right? Unless you've got TV rights to sell, and most football clubs don't.
And the broadcasters are going to be tightening their belt as much as anyone, because people have put their sports subscription on hold, if they've frozen them or cancelled them altogether. So when the renegotiation comes around, no one knows what Sky will be offering next time.
I hear from the insiders that Sky were looking to drive down the price of the deal for the next one, and that was before COVID-19. So they've already paid enough. It's extremely unlikely that the Premier League are going to get any improvement on their offer. And as for, you know, the international deals, I mean, they're just going to go through the toilet. So, yeah, it's a serious thing. Not that we would have expected solidarity payments from the TV companies for the lower league anyway, but any chance of that is out the window.
There was talk as well that Premier League were going to put their hand in the pocket to help the lower league clubs, and if they do that, you know, great, that would be wonderful. But Leagues 1 and 2 can't be bailed out by charity. They need something sustainable. And if they're to, and this, to be fair, I could have said this in February or January, you know, yeah. They do need something sustainable anyway. It can't go on like this forever. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see the Buries of this world happen again and again and again. But this obviously, this is like dropping a big bomb on the situation. And so something I think does need to change for, certainly for the clubs in the bottom half of the professional leagues, because without those revenue streams, something as bad is going to happen, obviously, to lots of them. They've talked about potentially having salary caps for clubs, not for on individual players, but for a club. So you have a set budget that everybody has to stick to. That could be something that keep the costs down. There's a lot of other things that can potentially do, but the reality is that all of those things are going to be sticking plasters. we, even without this COVID thing, but I don't think those leagues are going to be able to function in a few months, probably inside of a year, unless there is a vaccine. Because if there's no vaccine, you can't play those matches, and those clubs are going to go to the wall.
At best, you're going to see a rise of semi-pro clubs in the Football League.
Yes. If a vaccine is found, perhaps in the next weeks, who knows? I mean, you need to be a football economist to be able to make these kind of projections, and we're not, and I'm not. But let's just posit a scenario. If a vaccine comes in the short term and it's rolled out, let's say, in this country, and if you're following the activities of the UK government recently, then it's not a guarantee that the vaccine will be rolled out efficiently and quickly. Then let's say that all that process takes maybe at tops 18 months. You might be able to salvage something from this, but anything beyond that, and then you're talking about certainly regionalizing the lower two leagues, because it would be crazy to have national leagues at this point, and semi-professional clubs. That's the most realistic way of doing it. And a huge surfeit of players all the way down the non-league pyramid who are looking for clubs to play for. And they will find clubs to play for because new clubs will emerge, but whether or not they're geared up for taking spectators, whether or not they're just, I mean, like, you might find a huge explosion in park football because, you know, you've got Phoenix clubs sprouting up all over the place. If football will continue, it will endure. Of course it will. People will keep playing it. People will keep watching it. But, you know, we could be looking at a complete implosion of organized spectator-based football clubs. And for all of what that means, if we don't find a vaccine, if a vaccine's not found and rolled out soon-ish.
Hmm. I wonder how confident the players are in all of this. There are so many unknowns with the situation right now with the virus. For example, the fact that it seems to be affecting people of black and minority backgrounds more than anybody else. You know, football has a diverse mix of players, which should be applauded. But if you're a player that's potentially going to be asked to return to work and start playing in June, you know, you've got a family to look after, you've got your own health to think of, your own life to think of. You're going to have to look at the potential scenarios there and wonder whether it actually is worth it. There could be a scenario that some players could refuse to play, and I wouldn't look down on them for that. You know, that's their own personal decision to make. And I don't just mean players at lower level. I mean, you're at the same risk if you're playing for Lincoln City as you are playing for Liverpool. And if, you know, players of either of those clubs decided that it wasn't for them, then I don't think anybody could look at them with any kind of questioning.
Yeah, it's far too simplistic to just look at players and say, oh, well, they're young, they're fit, this is a disease that affects older people far more than it affects younger people. This doesn't just affect the individual, it affects anyone who the individual comes in contact with. And as we said earlier on the podcast, that it takes a lot of people to put a game on. And if there's no vaccine coming soon, then football is going to change immeasurably over the next 2 years. And I can't help but feeling that there are some people that are still looking quite positively about that and thinking, well, actually, football needed to kick up the arse. It's about time it got shaken up. Now football has to be responsible. But the truth is, the winners of this will be the ones who have the most money. And the ones further down are the ones who are going to be made to suffer. They're going to be the ones who suffer most. They'll be the ones who can't afford to keep players on. Whereas richer clubs that have cash flow, despite the fact that isn't anybody coming through the turnstiles, they'll be the ones to profit in this scenario. And so they'll be the ones that will set football's future.
Yeah. Terry, you said a few weeks ago, this is going to be a golden age for disaster capitalists. That popped back into my brain today when I was reading something about the European Super League, which suddenly came up today. You made me, you reminded me of that as well, Graham, when you were talking about winners and losers, because there are the disaster capitalists that are saying, well, maybe there's no better time than now to break up football and have a European League. The fallout of that, plus this and all the legacy stuff that we've talked about as well. I mean, wow. That's really pulling the rug from under the grassroots game, isn't it?
Not to mention the whole issue with head injuries and stuff like that. I mean, with the money coming out of the game, it's going to be harder to coach safely. All of those other issues, which may seem peripheral, well, they are peripheral now, will all come into play. And sort of like say, well, is it safe? You know, when you're not talking about professional level, we're talking at youth level, at kids level, where you just want to take your kids to play football because it's a nice thing to do, you know, every week, and it's good exercise for when they enjoy it. All of that infrastructure is going to be
really strongly tested in this period when it's just simply not going to take place anymore, and how much of it will be left. And then when the game starts to piece itself back together again, you know, will it say, well, actually, we'll play a form of the game where we play with only passing the ball, and this one over here, you can head the ball, but you have to agree to certain terms and conditions. And it's the kind of thing that could really alter the sport quite significantly. In the past, we've talked about these kind of things with perhaps a residue of excitement. But I mean, these are not the circumstances with which you want these kind of changes to make. But you want them to be done by consensus and by evolution, and by, because people have made, you know, decisions that this is how the direction they want to go in, and they're positive democratic decisions and not driven by awful, awful circumstances that we're in now. Just to say something about your European Super League, Jan, yeah, that's a good point. But in many ways, I think that that is actually under some danger, because the cost of travel going forward is going to be quite high. You're going to have to be quite rich, I think, to be able to move that stuff around. I mean, yeah, the Premier League, the big clubs probably can do it, but this is something that I suspect that the FIA in motorsport are probably rattling their heads around now, is just how much more expensive is it going to be to do these kind of traveling shows where they go around and hold these events, and, you know, how realistic is it to do it? I mean, I would suggest to you that, in fact, you know, we might see a reduction in interest in European football. We might all suddenly start turning more and more towards our own domestic leagues, as we try and resolve our own problems. But things are so fluid. I mean, you know, we're talking about the start of the Bundesliga. We started by talking about the start of the Bundesliga this Saturday. But I'm not saying this is going to happen and it's not a prediction, but I wouldn't be remotely surprised if all of those games were scrubbed and it didn't happen. I really wouldn't. I mean, it's extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
But it's still, I would say there's 10% chance that that whole fixtures could be scrubbed. If there's a huge spike, a few more clubs have to self-isolate, then suddenly they're like, they don't have anybody to play the games anymore, and then they decide to scrub the whole thing. It is not beyond the realms of possibility. So, you know, it's wonderful to prognosticate and just look ahead and think about these things, and it's probably uplifting in many ways and therapeutic, but we don't know any more than anybody else. Anyone who says this is how it's going to be in the future is, I don't think, playing with a full deck. Apart from us, when we said without a vaccine, football is fucked, because I think that is a truth.
I look at the push for everyone to get the Premier League back on, then about everyone saying about how much it would be good for the nation. And also the fact that all the Premier League seem to be interested in actually not having to pay out lots and lots of money to broadcasters for not playing the games. But in reality, once the Premier League starts again, let's say they do manage to get everything lined up for a 1st of June restart. The first game Liverpool play and win, they've won the title. They're not going to be interested in, and no Liverpool fan is going to be any way interested about any game that follows that, because it doesn't matter. I mean, they've actually officially won the title. So they won't have to turn up for the rest of their games, where they'll be playing teams who are struggling against relegation. The whole integrity of the league thing just foregoes out the window immediately. And it is this bizarre situation where you've got teams like Norwich. Norwich would, I would imagine, would be quite happy if the season was scrubbed off. But they can't face that at the moment, because they have to go through this whole thing of going through the relegation battle, at which they will almost certainly fail in. Because you can't see any team, given these circumstances, getting a run of form together. I don't think any team is going to be able to gel as well as would need to escape relegation. Yeah, we are going to see some really, really dodgy results, really surprising results, and some hilarious games, I'm sure. But they're much more likely, I think, to be nil-nils than 4-4s. That's all I can envisage at the moment, because the goals you are going to see are going to be down to errors rather than brilliant play, aren't they?
And as well as that, you know, for talk about the integrity of the division, Liverpool are forever going to have it hanging over them that they won their first title in 30 years in the COVID year. The truth is, they're winning it under a cloud, aren't they?
Yeah.
As well as that, you know, Norwich City. Let's say they scrap relegation from the Premier League, so Norwich City are forever. You know, like, you know, the amount of time it took Sunderland to get over the fact that they got promoted when they shouldn't have been promoted, and that was in the early 90s. Right? still, people say that to me now.
Arsenal still have it after the First World War. That's over 100 years ago.
Well, there you go. So there's, it's going to be forever hanging over those three teams that they're only in the Premier League because of, an unfortunate turn of events. So it's always going to hang over those clubs anyway. So, and then, of course, that brings subsequent seasons into disrepute as well, doesn't it? Because, you know, then you're playing with those clubs in the division that may not have been meant to have been there. So, the integrity's, it's all shot up anyway, isn't it, really? So, they should just draw a line under it, start again next year when it's safe to do so.
My proposal is this: they should disband the EFL and put Leagues 1 and 2, hand it over, ownership over to the Football Association, effectively nationalising Leagues 1 and 2. It's not the same thing, but you know what I mean. The Championship basically should resign from the EFL and join the Premier League, and there should be a Premier Leagues 1 and 2, and then they should divide it up according to how they want to do it. And they may well choose it to be based on, just do what they did with the WSL. I mean, it leaves a sour taste in the mouth, but I mean, it might well be a good way of being able to corral all the resources of the top clubs. And even, I mean, and this is sacrilege to say, but I'd even countenance, like, asking Sunderland to join the Premier League at this point. I think that the thing to do is to circle the wagon and allow the lower league clubs under the auspices of the FA and the protection of the FA to be able to recover and hopefully rebuild after this, and allow the top two tier clubs to be able to go under the protection of the Premier League and hopefully, be able to make salvage something from what's left of our system. And as for Liverpool, unfortunately, that horse has bolted. It's too late now. I mean, it will never, they should have won the title a few years beforehand. They had 30 years to win the title. They finally got round to it, and this has happened. And it's just tough titty. And it's a shame, and it's sad for Liverpool fans, but it's happened. So what can you do?
Yeah, there is nothing you can do. I mean, no one is the evil person in this. And I think that's half the problem, is whenever solutions are put, or potential solutions are put up, the first battle cry is, oh yeah, well, have fun in court. Litigation seems to be the first thing that everyone's going to. I don't think these clubs are going to be able to afford lawyers when this is shaken down. I don't think that there is going to be any way that clubs will be able to say, oh, well, this is completely unfair that we weren't promoted. Look at Coventry. Coventry, by all rights, should be a Championship team at the beginning of next season. It's very likely that they won't be, given one reason or another about how things are going to work out without being able to play a season through. And even if you do play a season through, how that it's just not going to bear any relation to what happened in the before times. As Jan says, clubs like Southend, they need the season to finish now. I mean, it doesn't matter where they are. They're going to go down anyway. If they make them play out the rest of the season, they're still going down and they're still going to be pretty much at death's door. The best thing to do is to shut the season off, not put any more financial burden on that club, and hopefully they can find a way of surviving. But it looks next to impossible, and they're not the only ones. So Accrington Stanley, now there's a club that is actually owned and run properly, and they're in danger of going tits up because they're just in need of money. And everyone is. Everyone's in the same position. So you do get the feeling that there will need to be new ways of doing things. And Terry, I think you're right. There may need to be a radical shake-up whereby, you hate to say it, but a franchise system where you must be this financially viable to enter.
It's awful.
It is awful.
It is awful.
But you're right.
But it might be necessary.
Yeah, these are the decisions that they made in women's football, because women's football is run on a shoestring. It doesn't have the big TV money like the men's game does. So you saw when Man United set up, they were parachuted into the second tier because they knew that the club had the money behind them to push that. It wouldn't be worth them starting at the bottom of the pyramid or anywhere further down. It's not worth it. That no one benefits from that. And so, you could get the situation where it's like, right, okay, have you got a ground that you can get 30,000 people into? Okay, right. Do you have that number of supporters who will pay on pay-per-view to watch you at that game? Yeah, fine. You're now in the top echelons now. If Accrington Stanley say, well, we've got loads of loyal fans. Yeah, but how many are going to subscribe on a pay-per-view basis to watch your games? And franchising could be the thing that saves football in England, but it's a hideous concept. You think you can play in the Premier League with a bank balance like this, so you can have the chicken.
Uh,
Well, these are all things to come, aren't they? But yeah, for now, let's just look at the positives and the fact that football is coming back on Saturday. I don't think there's enough football for us to do a box set. So sorry, box set subscribers. I think that's going to be a couple of weeks off yet, I feel. That's if you've still got your subscription to BT or Sky, that is. I know I haven't. But that is all we have time for this week. We'll be back next week with actual football to talk about, won't we, Terry?
Yeah, fingers crossed, there will be. And if you're interested, I have written a little preview for the Bundesliga, although, in fairness, you could just listen to this podcast, it's kind of all in there.
Yes, it is on our new blog that we've set up on the website. So if you go to sofpodcast.com, there is the link for the blog, and you can read Terry's preview of the return of the Bundesliga. But as I said, that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Feldman, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter at Sound of Football, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
It's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. But not farewell. Or is it the other way around? Maybe we should start saying see you soon or see you next time. Goodbye sounds a bit, you know,
final. How about stay alert? Should we
stay alert. Watch out for them viruses. Yeah.
I saw one yesterday.
Stay alert. Yeah. Protect the economy. Give your life. Give your life for the economy.
Oh, dear.